but handed the weapon over. When Tyr asked the boy on his left for his sword also, that young man laughed, drew with a flourish, and presented it to Tyr on one knee. With a short sword in either hand, Tyr walked into the makeshift combat floor. He watched closely for a moment, staying out of both opponents' immediate line of sight, as he tested the swords he held for balance. They were lighter than the one he'd left in Redurn, and of a slightly different design, made for letting blood rather than killing, he thought. Finished with his preparations, he darted forward and attacked. Tuarsin lost his sword altogether. Nayret kept his blade, but only at the cost of form and balance. He landed ignominiously on his rump.
"If you're going to fight," said Tyr, "at least do it right.
Nayret, you lose power because your shoulders are stiff. You're making your arms do all the work." Tyr turned his back to Nayret, knowing from the past few days of observation just how well the boy would take being criticized and what he would do about it.
"Tuarsin," Tyr said, "you need to worry less about trying to scratch your opponent and more about defending yourself. In a real fight, you'd have been dead a half dozen times."
He turned and caught the blade Nayret had aimed at his back.
"Watch this and see what I mean," continued Tyr, as if he weren't fending off the angry boy's blows.
It wasn't as easy as he made it look.
"Nayret is extending too much. Ah, see? That attack is what I was talking about earlier. If you'd had your body behind it instead of just your arm, it might have accomplished something. Look, he wants to really hurt me, but he's been so trained to go for touches rather than hits that he doesn't stand a chance of hurting me beyond a scratch or two. That's the problem with too much dueling. You don't know what to do in a real fight."
Tyr put his left hand behind his back to get that blade out of his way. Then he turned the blade in his right so that when he hit Nayret, he didn't take off his arm, just numbed it so the boy lost his sword. Tyr tapped him on the cheek.
"By the way," he said, "never go after an opponent when his back is turned unless there is more at stake than your pride."
Then he turned his back to Nayret again, knowing that he'd gone a fair way to reducing the amount of influence the boy had upon the other Passerines in the last few minutes.
"Tuarsin, why don't you try a round against me?"
After the council meeting, Foran found that he was quite popular. People followed him wherever he went, to his bedchamber if he didn't get the door shut fast enough. Tradition would keep all the steps at the palace until just before harvest. If they kept this up until then, he'd have the whole lot of them thrown out. Finally, having had enough of the fawning, resentful septs, Foran sent for Eivor to go riding with him. He'd been avoiding Eivor since he'd put words to the fears he'd always had. It was poor payment for the septs' swift support during the council meeting, and Foran had to do something to change it. In the stable, he mounted without aid, but he had other things on his mind and took little note of it. For hours, he dragged Eivor from one merchant guild master to the next. It was not out of the ordinary for the emperor to visit a guild master's shop. An emperor would hardly buy goods from a lesser man. If anyone was watching Foran, and he thought there was at least one man following them, they would see that Foran purchased something at every shop. Foran knew all the guildmasters, of course, but this was the first time he'd set himself to be pleasant to them. After they left the Weaver's Guild, Eivor gave in to the curiosity Foran had seen building all morning. "You don't need a bed hanging," said Eivor. "You could care less about silver candy dishes and tables with fluted legs. Just what are you doing?" Foran had come to believe Eivor innocent of anything other than being assigned to keep the Emperor company and told to keep him occupied. Even so, he didn't quite trust his own evaluation. He should not have had Eivor come with him. Blade tossed his head, and Foran let his reins slide through his fingers, then gradually shortened them again to keep a light hold on the stallion.
"After my uncle died," Who told you to befriend me?
Eivor stilled.
It's all right,
said Foran, though he watched the crowded streets rather than Eivor.
I just would like to know who it was.
My father, said Eivor.
But it wasn't...
I suspect it was, said Foran ruefully.
I was what, 12? And you 17? It would have been an unhappy chore, and I thank you for it.
He took a deep breath and chose to trust.
I'm trying to build some kind of a power base. The steps will require a lot of work on my part before I know who will back me and why. But the city is as important to the stability of the Empire as the Septs. I thought it would be good to find backing here, where the Septs are too proud to look.
I do like you, said Eivor quietly. I always have.
Ah, said Foran, for lack of anything better to say.
How could Eivor have liked him when everyone, including Foran himself, had despised him? What had there been to like? But Eivor had done his best to forward Foran's plans, and for that, and for so many years of duty, Foran owed him the chance to keep his white lies. They rode in silence to the shop of the master importer, who brought goods from all over the Empire and beyond.
"Is Guildmaster Emtarig in?"
asked Foran of the boy who manned the shop.
"Not now, sir. May I help you?"
He was new, this boy, and Foran doubted that he knew even who it was who entered the shop. Foran was dressed in riding clothes without imperial symbols. There was nothing to say who he was except his face.
"Boy," said Eivor gently enough, "tell your master that the Emperor awaits him in his shop." The boy's eyes darted between Foran and Eivor, trying to decide who was the Emperor. At last, he bowed low to Eivor and scuttled through a curtained passage and, from the sound of his feet, up the stairs to the master's private lodgings. Foran began sorting among the items on the laden shelves and hid his smile. Eivor couldn't help that he looked more like an emperor than Foran did. By careful negotiations with the other guilds, the Importers Guild members could sell items that were not made in the city. There were beautifully tanned skins of animals Foran had never seen, and likely never would. Valuable blown glass goblets stood on a high shelf where no one was likely to knock them off accidentally. Foran was fingering a handful of brightly colored beads that caught his attention when he heard the boy leap back down the stairs. He didn't turn until the guildmaster said,
"Most gracious emperor, you honor my shop."
"Master Willen," Foran said with honest delight.
He had to turn back to put the beads away.
"I thought that you had retired to some gods-forsaken province, never to return to Taella."
"Careful, Foran," said Eivor, who was grinning. "He went to Redurn, which is part of my sept."
"And Lehi is truly a gods-forsaken place," agreed Foran. "What business brings you back? I hope that there is nothing wrong with Master Emtarig."
"My son is well," said Willen. "But I have not seen my grandchildren in too long. I thought it was time to visit. My son is out to the market to speak with the Music Guild about a drum I brought back with me. Also, I had some people to see here."
"Good," said Foran.
He thought of asking Willen what he knew of a man named Tyr. But when he spoke, all he said was,
"What would you take for 3 of these hangings?"
He would ask Tyr about Willen instead. They bargained briskly until they reached a price both thought fair. Foran let it drag on for longer than he might have, hoping to catch Emtarig. Willen was an old friend of his uncle's, but Emtarig was the master guildsman now, the man Foran needed to impress. But Emtarig did not return. So Foran paid for the hangings and asked Willen to send the goods to the palace at his leisure. They went to 3 more guildmasters and bought a cobalt blue glass jar, 4 copper birds that sang in the wind, and an eating knife inlaid with shell before Foran headed back to his rooms for a private evening meal with Eivor.
They talked, but not about anything serious. Soon, thought Foran, he'd tell Eivor all that he'd found out about the path, but not yet. Eivor wouldn't believe him as easily as Tyr had. He wasn't used to Foran being anything except a jaded drunkard. Though to do him justice, Eivor didn't have the motivation to believe in evil that Tyr had. Tyr returned to his room tired, bruised, and ultimately satisfied, a usual state these days. His daily sword lessons had become more of a favorite activity than the dueling had ever been. The Passerines blossomed under his attention, and some, especially Tuarsin, had come around and grown more than he'd thought possible. He'd always had a knack for turning boys into fighting men, which was why Geraint offered him a job in his personal guard when there were other men, born in the Sept, who were as good or better with weapons. There were a few that weren't worth saving. Neret was one, and there was one of the youngest batch who was, if Tyr wasn't mistaken, one of those very few who seemed to be born without any morals or courage at all. He'd toady to those more powerful and hurt anyone he saw as weaker. In a few years, if he wasn't already, he'd be a rapist and murderer and never lose a night's sleep over it. Tyr had set Tuarsin and his large friend Kissel to watch over that one and protect the younger Passerines. The door to his room was open. Some of the boys would stop in at night, so nothing struck him as odd until he saw who it was. Mercaria? Sitting on his bed, her legs folded neatly underneath her, she smiled at him brightly. I hope that you don't mind that I came here this evening. Not at all, he said. She looked away. Play something for me, please, she said. Something to make me laugh. He closed the door and sat on the foot of his bed, taking the lute off the hooks he'd had installed in the wall. He played a bit of melody on the lute, tuning automatically until it was acceptable. How do you do it? She asked. Kallarn doesn't like anyone, and they generally return his feeling with interest. The only thing he loves is music. He works so hard at it, and he is never good enough. He hated the thought that because of your magic you would play better than he, no matter what he did or how much he practiced. I saw you take his hatred and turn it to hero worship in less than an hour. Telleridge said that you can't use your magic on us.
It's not magic, Tyr said. Kallarn loves music, and that is more important to him than all the hurts the world has dealt him. I just showed him that I loved music, too.
What about the rest? She asked. The Passerines follow you around like lost puppies.
I like people, said Tyr with a shrug. I don't think most of these boys are used to dealing with someone who likes them.
Unexpectedly, she laughed, but it wasn't a happy sound. The Masters are very concerned with what you have done to their control of the Passerines. Be careful. She turned her head, and he saw that there was a bruise on her jaw.
Who hit you?
He asked. She picked up a pillow and began straightening the fringe. One of the Masters told Kissel that they were worried because Kallarn was spending so much time away from the Eyrie. They told Kissel that he was to remind Kallarn where his loyalties should lie, and Kissel refused them. He said that you would not approve of him picking on someone weaker than himself. Tyr stilled his strings.
I don't suppose it even crossed his mind to agree and then either fake it or tell me about it. 11 all saved me from honest fools. Why couldn't they have gone to Tuarsin?
Mercaria stared at him, her hands stilled. You've done it on purpose, haven't you? You're taking control from the Masters on purpose. A month ago, Kissel would have been happy to please the Masters, to win the fear of the other Passerines. How did you do it? Tyr played a few notes of a dirge Kallarn had played for him on a violin. It sounded odd on a lute.
They are trying to ruin those boys, he said at last. To turn them into something much less than they could be.
He'd been certain that she was a spy for Telleridge, and that might still be true. But his instincts told him that it wouldn't take a lot to turn her against the Masters of the Path. He would just have to find the right words. He played a few more measures.
What happens to the ones who don't play their little game, Merceria? Boys like Collarn, who would never agree to the kinds of real damage the Path metes out. Or ones like Kissel, who was discovering that protecting someone weaker than he is makes him feel better about himself than tormenting them ever did.
She didn't say anything.
There aren't as many raptors as there should be,
he said gently.
Not for the numbers of passerines they have.
That's how they progress in the Path, she whispered. The boys who would be raptors are given the other boys' names. The ones like Collarn. They have to bring back proof that they have killed the bearer of the name they were given before they are raptors. She set the pillow aside. How do you do that? She said. If they knew what I told you, they would kill me.
You know it is wrong, he told her. You know they must be stopped.
By whom? She said, her incredulousness fueled by anger. You? Me? You are a prisoner in their power, Tyr of Redurn. You will die as they all do at the end of their year, and I am as much a prisoner as you.
Evil must always be fought, Tyr said. If you don't fight, then you are a part of it.
She rose to her feet and walked without haste to the door. You know nothing of what you face, or you would not be so arrogant, Bard. She shut the door tightly behind her.
Well, thought Tyr, that was unexpected.
Whores learn early that survival means that they have to look out for themselves. Mirceria had been a whore for a long time, but she wasn't talking like a whore who cared for no one else. She cared about those boys. She wasn't happy about it, but she cared.
Tyr slapped one of the scrawny first-year passerines on the shoulder after the boy finally executed the move Tuarsin had been struggling to teach him for days. Drills! Tyr called.
There were groans and half-hearted protests, but they formed up in three ragged lines, lines that straightened at his silent frown.
Begin,
he called, and worked with them. Drills were the heart of swordplay. If a man had to think about his body and how to move his sword, he'd be too slow to save himself. Drills taught the body to respond to information from eyes and ears, leaving the mind to plan larger strategy than just how to meet the next thrust. The sword he held wasn't the equal of the one he'd taken from some nobleman on the battlefield, but it was balanced. Mirceria had brought it to him when he requested it. Tyrd continued to work with his sword over the years, but the past weeks had sharpened him until he'd almost reached the speed and strength he'd held while he was a soldier. His left shoulder was always a bit stiff until he worked it out, but otherwise, he hadn't lost much flexibility to age. He drilled with the boys until sweat made his shirt cling uncomfortably to his shoulders. Then he brought his sword around in a flashy stroke that ended with it in its sheath.
Pools! Shouted the boys in one voice, and they dashed, swords in hand, to the washroom to play in the cold pool.
Tyr laughed and shook his head when Collarn stopped to invite him to the water fight.
I've no wish to drown before my time, he avowed. I'll wash up in my rooms.
Loyalty, he thought, watching the last of them disappear into the hall, was won by sweating with them.
They've improved, said Telleridge.
Tyr hadn't noticed the master, but he'd been concentrating on the boys. He took a glass of water from a servant.
They have, he said after taking a long drink. Some of them had further to go than others.
I knew that you were a soldier, but you were more than that. I've been looking into it,
Telleridge said.
Remarkable that a peasant boy, no offense, could be set to command soldiers. Are you one of the old Sept of Lehi's byblows?
Do you know where I'm from?
asked Tyr with a lazy smile as he handed the empty glass off to one of the silent waiters.
The Sept of Lehi, replied Telleridge.
Tyr shook his head.
I'm from Edirne, the first settlement the Army of Man created after the fall of the Shadowed, named for the hero of the fall, Red Ernave. We're farmers, tanners, bakers, he shrugged. But scratch a Redurni very deeply and you'll find the blood of warriors. If you'll excuse me, I need to wash up and change clothes.
When Tyr reached his cell, he closed his door and washed quickly with water from the basin left there for that purpose. Once he'd changed into clean clothes, he lay down on his bed. The last time Foran had visited, a few days ago, Geraint had sent word that he was on his way. It couldn't be too soon for Tyr's comfort. The masters weren't going to wait forever while Tyr wrested control of the Passerines from them. He woke for lunch and spent the rest of the day in his usual manner, talking and socializing in the Eyrie. In the evening he played for them, mostly raunchy army songs, but he feathered in others, songs of glory in battle and the sweetness of home. Looking over the faces of the men who listened to his music, he knew triumph, because, given a chance, most of them would grow into fine men. Men who would serve their emperor, a boy who was showing signs of being the kind of ruler a man could take pride in serving. Shrewd and clever with a streak of kindness, he tried hard to hide. When he returned to his room for the night, Mercaria tucked her arm flirtatiously in his and accompanied him. When they were inside his room, she dropped her flirtation and his arm and settled on his bed. Stroking the coverlet absently, she said, I swore I was done talking to you. I have survived here a long time, and I did it by keeping my mouth shut. How dare you demand more of me? She said it without heat. I have no power to affect the men who rule here. I am just a whore. Tyr leaned against the wall opposite the bed, crossed his feet at the ankles, and did his best to look neutral. I haven't seen the sun since I was 15, she murmured almost to herself. Sometimes I wonder if it still rises and sets.
It does, said Tyr. It does.
Telleridge is planning a disciplining.
She flattened her hand and stared at it as though she'd never seen it before.
What is a disciplining?
Asked Tyr, not liking the sound of it at all.
When a Passerine disobeys a raptor, they hold a meeting to decide what his punishment will be. Then they are punished in the Eyrie with all the Passerines in attendance. They usually do one every year just as a reminder.
Who was being disciplined? Asked Tyr. They wouldn't pick him, he thought. They were too smart for that.
They didn't need a martyr. They needed an example.
I don't know, she said.
Kallarn, he said. Or maybe Kissel or Tuarsen. But Kallarn if they're smart. If they hurt Tuarsen, Kissel won't stand for it. If they hurt Kissel, Tuarsen will go to his brother. And Eivor has enough friends, including the Emperor, to hurt the path. Kallarn has no close friends except for me, and he's the kind of person that people expect bad things to happen to. When it does, it won't disturb the Passerines much.
That's what I thought, said Mercaria softly. I like Kallarn. He has a vicious tongue when he wants to, but he's always polite to the people who can't defend themselves.
Tyr heard the grief in her voice.
This is more than a caning or a beating, he said.
All of the boys are forced to participate in the disciplining in some way, and the punishment can be anything, she said. Telleridge is very creative. Whipping is the most common, but some of the others are worse. One boy they forced to drink water. He passed out, and I think he died. They poured water on his face while he choked and gagged, and when he stopped, they just kept pouring.
Can you make sure I know about it before it happens? He asked.
She kept her eyes averted but nodded quickly.
If I know in advance, I don't always.
Can you get word to Kallarn? If they could warn him.
Tomorrow, she said after a moment. I have to do it myself. I can't trust any of the girls with a message like that. And I can't leave the path's rooms any more than you can. Tomorrow should be soon enough.
She spoke those words quickly, as if she could make it true just by saying so.
It should take a day or two for them to arrange to get word to everyone anyway.
Right,
he said.
Tell him to find a reason to leave town for a week.
She nodded, started to get up to leave, but then settled back, wrapping her arms around her middle.
Would you play something for me? Something cheerful so I can sleep?
He was tired, but she was tired too, and no more than she could he have slept, not with the knowledge that the masters had decreed that one of his boys was going to suffer for what Tyr had done.
I'm not going to sleep any time soon either, he said. Music would be nice.
He sat on the other end of his bed and started to tune his lute again. He'd just finished bringing the second course of strings in accord with the rest when the door opened unexpectedly. Tyr'd grown used to the respectful knocks of his captors. Even Foran knocked. It was too early for a visit from Foran. Tyr opened his mouth for a reproval, but stopped, shocked dumb when Lair entered the room wearing Tyr's own sword. Joy lit Lair's face, then dimmed a bit when he looked past Tyr and saw Mircea. He made a move to block the door. Perhaps, Tyr thought with a touch of amusement that threaded past his astonishment, to allow Tyr to assume a less compromising position. Did Lair actually think that his father would take a leman? But the door popped open wider before Lair could reach it, and Jess took two full strides into the room. The comfortable temperature of the room plummeted until Tyr could see his own breath, and Mircea let out an abortive squeak. Tyr got to his feet slowly, because it was never smart to move too quickly around Jess in this mode, and opened his arms. Jess's glance swept the room comprehensively, but he apparently didn't see anything too threatening in Mircea, because he took two steps forward and wrapped his arms around Tyr.
Papa, he breathed as the room warmed. Oh, Papa, we thought we'd never find you.
Of course you did.
A woman's voice, deep, rich, and beloved, filled the room like the sound of a cello. Tyr looked over Jess's shoulder to see his wife enter.
Ever since Hanea told us that he'd been taken alive, are you well?
Seraph looked so much like the Empress child he'd first met that it made him smile. An ice princess, his sister had called her with contempt. Being a straightforward person herself, Alanath had never seen that the cool facade could hide all manner of emotions that Seraph chose not to share.
I'm fine, Tyr said.
And seeing that she was not going to run into his arms immediately, he continued speaking.
And much happier than I was a few minutes ago. Lair, come here.
Lair had grown in the months since he'd seen him last, Tyr thought, hugging him tightly. So had Jess, for that matter. His oldest son was a little taller than Tyr now.
We missed you, said Lair, returning his hug. I missed you too.
He held him for a moment more.
Lair killed some people, said Jess. He saved Mother.
Lair stiffened in his arms, but Tyr merely hugged him tighter.
I'm sorry, son, he said. Killing another man is not something that should rest easily on your shoulders.
When he stepped back at last, he looked at Seraph, who'd stayed by the open door.
Is Rinny out there too?
As was her habit with him, she answered the real question he asked.
She's safe with your sister. Frost, it seems, was the only family casualty of this mess, though we were quite worried about you until just now. They killed Frost?
She nodded.
To make it look as if the both of you had walked into one of the blighted places,
We might have believed it if a cousin of mine hadn't straightened us out.
She hadn't looked at Merceria, but he knew that she didn't have any cousins. She must have met another traveler.
It's not safe for your cousins here, he warned.
She smiled like a wolf scenting prey.
Oh, they know that, she said.
I just hope these Salcenti of the secret path choose to try their tricks again. Her tongue lingered on secret path, making it sound childish and stupid, which of course it was.
You know about the secret path? He said.
We know about the secret path, said Lair. They're killing travelers and stealing their orders.
What?
Said Tyr, looking at Seraph.
She nodded. They take them from the dying traveler and place them in a stone that they wear on jewelry, so that they can use them.
How did you find out so much?
He asked.
Hanea told us, said Jess helpfully.
My cousin, agreed Seraph.
They have someone in Redurn who has been watching our whole family, said Tyr.
Not anymore, said his wife coolly.
Mother killed him.
Jess had found a perch on top of a small table and was playing with the vase that had occupied the table first. Tyr glanced back at Merceria.
I told you they'd be sorry if they ever ran afoul of my wife. Merceria, I'd like you to meet my family. My wife Seraph, my eldest son Jess, and my youngest son Lair. Seraph, Jess, Lair, this is Merceria, who has helped make my captivity bearable.
Jess nodded with the shy manner that characterized him in front of strangers. Lair made a stiff bow, and Seraph turned on her heel and walked out the door. Lair's smile died, so Tyr took a moment to explain to him.
She knows me too well to think I've taken a mistress after all these years. As you should. Merceria is an ally, so be polite. I need to take a moment with your mother.
He followed Seraph and closed the door behind him softly. Seraph was studying the stone wall of the hall as if she'd never seen stone laid upon stone before. They were safe enough, he thought. Anyone who walked down this hall was coming to see him, and at this hour, that meant one of the Passerines. There was time, so he waited for her to show him what she needed from him.
There is death magic in these stones, she said.
She didn't sound as if it bothered her.
They've been killing people for a long time, he said. There's a message awaiting you in Redurn, telling you that I'm still alive. It should have gotten there by now.
Hopefully someone will direct the messenger to Alanath, said Seraph, without looking away from the wall.
She set a palm against it and said,
Once we convinced her you were alive when you left, she was most eager to hear if you'd stayed that way.
She pushed away from the wall abruptly. When she turned toward him, he thought she'd look at him at last, but her eyes caught on the floor and stayed there.
We need to get you out of here, she said in a low voice. This place is a labyrinth, but Lair found you, which was the difficult part. He'll be able to backtrack on the way out.
I can't leave, Seraph, he said.
Her face came up at that.
There's a boy about Jess's age who's going to be hurt because of me if I can't put a stop to it. And they've put some sort of hex on me anyway, so I can't wander around at will.
She reached out to touch him for the first time since she'd appeared at his door. Gripping his hands lightly, she turned his hands over to look at his wrists.
I can break this, she said positively after a moment. But it will take time, and will do us no good since as long as this boy of yours is in danger, you won't leave anyway.
He twisted his hands until he could grip hers.
Seraph, he said. It's all right now.
Her hands shook in his, but he could only see the top of her head.
I thought you were dead, she said.
She looked up, and the Empress was gone, lost in a face wild with emotion. Unexpectedly, he felt the lick of her magic caress his palms.
I can't do that again, she told him.
I can't lose anyone I love again.
You love me?
He moved his hands to her shoulders and pulled her close. She leaned against him like a tired infant. It was the first time she'd said that to him, though he knew that she loved him with the same fierceness that she loved her children. She had been trained to maintain control, and he knew that she was uncomfortable with the strength of the emotions she felt. Because he understood her, he'd never pushed her to tell him something that he'd known full well. He knew it would make her angry, but he had to tease her.
I had to get myself kidnapped by a bunch of stupid wizards and dragged halfway across the Empire to hear that? If I'd known that's what it would take, I'd have gotten myself kidnapped 20 years ago.
It's not funny, she said, stomping on his foot in her effort to get away from him.
No, it's not, he said, pulling her tighter.
The ferocious joy of holding her when he'd been half certain he'd never see her again kept him teasing her beyond prudence.
So why didn't you tell me you loved me before? 20 years didn't give you enough time? Or did you only figure it out when you thought I was dead?
Oh, if I'd have told you, you'd just have said the same back, she said.
Her answer made no sense to him, except that she really didn't find anything amusing in the situation. He didn't want to hurt her feelings, so he tucked the laughter of her presence inside his heart and tried to understand what had upset her.
If you had told me that you loved me, he said carefully, I'd have told you the same.
You wouldn't have meant it, she said firmly. Haven't you spent the last 20 years trying to make up for marrying me by being the perfect husband and father?
Her words stung, so his were a little sharp in return.
I'd have meant it.
You married a woman you thought a child, married her so that you would not have to take over the bakery from Alanath and Bandor. You felt guilty.
Of course I did, he agreed. I told them we were married. I did it knowing that you were too young for marriage and that you would have to give up your magic and your people. I knew that you were frightened of rejoining the Travelers and having to take responsibility for so many lives again. But I knew that was where you felt you belonged, and I kept you with me.
You did it to save yourself from being forced into the bakery, Seraph said. And that made you feel guilty. If I'd told you then that I loved you, you'd have said you loved me too, because you wouldn't hurt my feelings.
Abruptly, Tyr understood. He pulled her back to him and laughed. He started to speak, but he had to laugh again first.
Seraph, he said. Seraph, I was never going to be a baker. Even Alanath knew that. I wanted you, and I was extremely glad that circumstances forced you to turn to me. I don't know that I loved you then. I just knew that I couldn't let you get away from me.
He stepped back so he could look into her face.
I love you, Seraph.
He watched, delighted, as tears filled her eyes and spilled over. Then he kissed her.
I was so afraid, she said when she could talk. I was so afraid that we'd be too late,
she sniffed.
Plague it, Tyr, my nose is running. I don't suppose you have something I can wipe it on.
He pulled back and stripped off his overshirt and handed it to her.
Tyr,
she said scandalized.
That is silk.
And we didn't pay for it. Here, blow.
She did. He wadded up the shirt and wiped her eyes with a clean spot. Then, the expression in his eyes holding her motionless, he tossed the shirt on the floor. He put a hand on either side of her face and kissed her, open-mouthed and hungry.
I love you,
she whispered, when he pulled his head away, breathing heavily. He kissed the top of her head and hugged her close.
I know that, he said. I've always known that. Did you think that you could hide it by not saying the words? I love you, too. Do you believe it now?
Seraph started to answer him, but then remembered that he'd know if she lied. Did she really believe him when he said that he loved her? Whatever he believed now, she knew she was right about the reasons he'd married her in the first place.
He needed a reason to leave the bakery that would allow him to stay near enough so that he didn't feel that he was running away from his family again. But that didn't mean that he wasn't attracted to her. It didn't mean he couldn't have grown to love her. Yes, she believed him. She started to say so, but she'd waited too long.
"You know, for an intelligent woman," he said exasperated, "you can be remarkably stupid."
He threw up his hands and paced away from her.
"All right, all right. Maybe if I married a woman and felt I'd taken advantage of her, if she asked me, I might tell her that I loved her. Maybe I wouldn't want to hurt her feelings. You could be right about that. But why do you persist in believing that I couldn't love you even if I felt guilty about marrying you so young? Is it impossible that I've lusted after you since you stood on the steps of that inn and defied the whole lot of grown men who'd just gotten finished killing your brother?"
She tried to hide her smile, but he saw it, and it only made him angrier. So he did what he always did when she'd pushed past that air of pleasant affability he showed the world. He dragged her back against him and kissed her again. Hot and fierce, he moved his lips on hers, forcing his tongue through before she could welcome him. The stone was cold on her shoulders as his hips settled heavily against her midriff, and demonstrated quite admirably that, if nothing else, his lust was quite real. "All right," she said mildly, if a bit breathlessly, when he freed her mouth at last. "I believe you love me. Likely our sons and that poor woman you left with them believe you love me too. Shall we go see?" He laughed.
"I missed you, Seraph."
Chapter 15. Inside Tyr's cell, for that's what it was, even decked out in luxuries befitting royalty, Seraph saw that she had been exactly right about what everyone had been doing. Lair looked uncomfortable, Jess inscrutable, and the woman, Mircea, looked vaguely panicked. "I am sorry," said Seraph sincerely to Mircea. "I meant no insult to you, Mircea. But crying in front of strangers is not something I do willingly. We had all but given Tyr up for dead these months past, and I could hardly believe that he is here, safe." Mircea looked distinctly relieved at Seraph's calm manner. She got to her feet. "Of course I understand. I'll leave you, Tyr, to your reunion."
"Thank you," said Tyr. "Let me know about the disciplining."
She paused by the door. "I won't tell them that your family is here," she said.
"I didn't think you would," said Tyr. "Sleep well."
"I think I will," she said, and closed the door behind her. Tyr sat down on the bed, pulling Seraph down next to him and tucking her under his arm. Lair sat on the other side of him, not quite touching, but close.
"So," said Tyr, "tell me about your adventures. Not you, Seraph. I want more than the bare bones. Lair, what happened? You thought I was dead?"
Seraph was happy to let Lair do most of the talking. Tyr seemed to think that they were all safe here for now, and she was content with his assessment. She closed her eyes and breathed in Tyr's scent, felt his warmth against her side. At the end of the story, Tyr shook his head. "My love," he said, and she saw the laughter in his eyes.
"You have changed. You brought a whole traveler clan out to Taella to rescue me. When did you learn how to be so persuasive?"
She scowled at him. "When I discovered it was more useful to have pawns to do what I wanted them to than it was to kill them all and do it myself." Triumph flooded her when she saw that Tyr wasn't absolutely certain she was joking until Lair laughed. Tyr rolled his eyes.
"Leave for a season and see what happens. The women and children don't remember the respect they owe you. What are you planning on doing with a whole clan?"
"We'd have never found a way into the palace without them," said Seraph. Lair laughed.
turns out that one of the Emperor's hired travelers to work some magic for him a few generations back. He didn't want to be seen consorting with them, so he brought them in by a secret way.
We went under the ground, said Jess, his voice dreamy. Fungus hung from the sides of the tunnel like strings of melted cheese.
Jess found a girlfriend, said Lair.
Tyr looked at Seraph, but it was the first she'd heard of it. Jess smiled sweetly and said nothing. The girls of Rongier's clan wouldn't come within a dozen yards of Jess if they could help it.
Anea, she said.
Lair grinned.
I think that's how she feels about it, too. Sort of shocked and dismayed, but Jess is smug.
Hanea is the raven you found, right?
Asked Tyr. She nodded.
Don't worry so, Mother, said Jess.
Tyr smiled and kissed the top of her head.
Trust Jess, he said. He'll be all right.
He looked over at Lair.
How do you like being a hunter?
He's always been a hunter, said Seraph acerbically. She wasn't certain that she wanted to hear Lair's answer to that question. She didn't want her son to be unhappy. He just didn't know about it.
The Lark of Rongier's clan has been teaching me some things that are pretty interesting, said Lair.
Tyr reached out and patted Lair's knee sympathetically.
Rinny wanted to be a guardian,
Jess said, his gentle eyes gliding over Lair.
She wanted to turn into a panther, like me.
I'll just bet she did, said Tyr. I've missed you all.
We should go, Papa,
said Jess abruptly. We can't, answered Seraph. One of Tyr's friends is in danger, and the wizards here have bespelled Tyr, so he can't leave the path's domain. She saw the guardian rising through her son's eyes and said, It's nothing I can't fix, but I'll need a little time to study it. In any case, he won't go until his friend is out of danger. Tyr, Lair's told you our story. Tell us what happened to you. They weren't as polite an audience as he had been, interrupting him frequently. Seraph pestered him for details about what little he recalled from the times the path's wizards had taken him. Lair teased him about the women who'd bathed him and braided his hair, and fretted when Tyr told them how he was imprisoned by magic. Jess was quiet until Tyr told them about his royal visitor.
The Emperor? Said Jess. The Emperor visited you in your cell?
How did he know you were here? Asked Lair suspiciously.
I'm sworn to secrecy, so I need to get his permission before I tell you, said Tyr. But that's another story entirely.
Both of the boys enjoyed Tyr's explanation of how he'd begun winning over the Passerines. Seraph shook her head.
They didn't know what they were doing, kidnapping you.
Well, said Tyr, I may have outsmarted myself. Seems Telleridge tried to set one of my boys out on a bullying mission, something that boy had done a number of times. Kissel refused, and, being a straightforward sort of fellow, he told Telleridge that the reason he'd refused was because I wouldn't like it.
Is he the one that you were worried about? Asked Seraph.
Mircea told me tonight that the Masters, the Path's wizards, are organizing something they call the Disciplining.
He told them what he knew of it.
I don't think that they'll actually go after Kissel. He's got friends in high places. I think they'll take the boy that they tried to send Kissel after.
He leaned his head back against the wall.
Seraph, you said that Bandor and the Master in Redurne were shadowed.
Yes. Lair and Jess both could see it. He inhaled.
When Foran and I combined all the information that we had about the path, we came to some disturbing conclusions. That plague that swept through the traveling clans 20 years ago also visited the noble houses of the Empire, and when it was finished, the Emperor was dead, leaving only an infant on the throne. Also, a high percentage of the followers of the path found themselves septs, though they might have been as many as 8 or 10 people away from the inheritance when the plague hit.
You think that there might be another one, she said, cold chills tightening her spine. Not just shadowed, but willingly shadowed like the unnamed king.
You think it might be this Telleridge?
He nodded.
Foran sent for my old commander, the Sept of Gerant. He's on his way now. With his military and tactical advice, Foran hopes that he can break the path. If we take them by surprise, and Foran is ruthless enough, he'll be right.
But Gerant won't be here in time to save your boy, said Seraph softly.
Probably not.
These Passerines of yours, said Seraph thoughtfully. They won't willingly participate in hurting another boy.
I don't think so, said Tyr. Some of them maybe, but most of them won't.
Seraph smiled. Then the masters will be straining to enforce their will upon them with their stolen bardic orders. Tell me, Tyr, if all of the path were in the same room together, how many would there be?
There are about 60 Passerines, he said. I don't know exactly how many raptors. I have the names of about 100, perhaps double that.
And the wizards? Said Seraph. You said there were 5.
5,
he agreed.
And a handful of apprentice and hedgewitch types.
We have an owl, a falcon, an eagle, and 2 ravens, said Seraph. I don't know how many ordinary wizards the clan has, but they'll come along. There are probably 50 travelers who would love nothing more than an excuse to attack a bunch of Salcenti who've been preying upon travelers.
You are short one owl, said Tyr. They've done something so that my magic doesn't work on them, remember?
Seraph frowned. She didn't like the mysterious magic that these masters had been working on Tyr. That kind of thing works better on wizards than it does on order-bearers. She tapped her fingers against her lips as she worked it out. You said that it just keeps your magic from working on them, right? He nodded. That would be a very difficult and odd thing to do on purpose, Seraph said. They'd have to have something personal from everyone who is a follower to do that, blood or hair. It would be an incredibly complex spell, and the power it would require. She stopped when a better idea occurred to her. I'll ask Hanea to be certain, but it sounds to me that it is more likely that their spell is imperfect and erratic. Hanea told me that they don't really know as much about the orders as they think. Blocking the powers of an ordinary wizard would be simple if they had enough power, but in order to block the powers of an order bearer, they'd have to be very specific about everything they want to stop. I'll bet that some of the odder magics still come to you without a problem. Because they didn't get it right, their spell will be unraveling slowly. She nodded, because the explanation fit what she knew of magic and Tyr's experience here. Your magic didn't work on them, because they and you know it won't work. But even that effect will fade with time. She smiled at him. But even if it doesn't fade, you have already made your contributions in the number of Passerines who will take your side. If we attack them during the disciplining, we'll have the travelers, both warriors and wizards, our order-bearers, and most of the Passerines. You said that the disciplining is mandatory for the Passerines, but not the raptors.
That doesn't mean that they won't be there, he said. But I see where you're going. They'll all be there. The masters, who are the real danger. Once they are gone, Foran can take his time to eliminate the rest. We'll have to talk to Foran, though. I'll not bring a clan of travelers into his palace without his permission if I can help it.
A light knock sounded at the door, sending Tyr to his feet.
A moment,
he said, glancing around the room, though he knew there weren't any hiding places. Peace, whispered Seraph. He won't see Jess, and... She turned to Lair, but couldn't see him either.
I'm going to have a talk with Bruid about what she's teaching Lair, she murmured.
Go ahead and open the door, Tyr. He won't see me either, not unless he's one of your wizards. With a whisper of magic, she ensured that she'd not attract any notice. Tyr's visitor would see her, but he would just ignore her presence unless something called her to his attention. Tyr's eyebrows climbed and his mouth quirked with amusement at himself, she thought. It was one thing to know everyone in your family could work magic. It was quite another to have them do it.
Tuarsin, he said when he'd opened the door. Come in.
I came as soon as I heard, said Tuarsin. The rumor's being passed all over the Eyrie. There's going to be a disciplining. I heard, said Tyr.
Seraph could see her husband weighing some decision.
Tuarsin, he said. If you needed to get in to see the Emperor, could you? At this time of night?
I suppose I could, Tuarsin said, but not without my brother Eivor's help.
He hesitated and thrust his chin up.
But I won't do anything that will imperil my Emperor, even if he's a stupid sot more interested in the newest wine from Carrick than in running his empire. Agreed, said Tyr. What I'd like you to do is persuade your brother to get you in to see the Emperor. Tell him it's urgent that you do so. Then...
Tyr paused and shook his head.
Then tell Foran you have a message for him that you can't give him in front of anyone except for Eivor. The Emperor knows too much about you, my lad, to trust himself to you, but he trusts Eivor. When the three of you are alone, you tell Foran that his bard would like an urgent word. Tell him that you and Eivor will accompany him, if he doesn't mind. Tell Foran that I have a plan, but time is of the essence.
Tuarsin stared at him.
Foran knows about you?
The bard grinned wickedly.
Don't go dismissing your Emperor out of hand, lad. I have a feeling that a lot of people have underestimated him, and they're about to get a rude awakening.
Tuarsin nodded slowly.
All right, I'll do it.
If I can't get in, I'll come back alone. Good lad, said Tyr, patting his shoulder and shooing him out the door.
He waited until the sound of Tuarsin's footsteps grew faint.
That was Tuarsin, the Sept of Lehi's younger brother, he said, sitting back down beside Seraph. He'll find Foran for us.
You know, muttered Seraph, who'd been working through Tyr's story while he talked with the boy, I knew that we were in trouble when all of our children were born ordered. I should have resigned myself to fighting against another shattered with the Emperor at my side years ago. Jess looked back at her impassively, but Lair smiled.
Maybe the gods are making you make up for those wells and blights you didn't fix for all these years in one fell swoop.
Seraph stole Tyr's eye roll. She could do it when she chose.
Cheeky. Carry them for 9 months, feed them, clothe them, and what do I get?
Impertinence.
Seraph, Tyr asked. If they want my order, why didn't they just take it? Why wait for a year?
I'm not certain, said Seraph, but magic works better on something you know well. I could cast a spell better on you than I could on a stranger. Their magic isn't foolproof. A lot of their stones don't work right. The year wait might be time for one of their wizards to get close to you so that their spells will succeed. Tyr rubbed his face.
I can't tell a Solcenti wizard from anyone else unless he's gathering magic, can you?
Seraph shook her head. I can see the orders if I look, but simple wizards know. Tyr yawned. Seraph frowned at him. How many nights do you sit up plotting? She asked briskly, but didn't wait for an answer. Boys, can you settle yourselves to being quiet? Tyr, you won't do anyone any good if you fall over asleep. You lie down here, and the boys and I will keep watch until the Emperor comes. He started to protest, and it was a mark of how tired he was that he stopped himself.
My love, if you make yourself comfortable, I'll lay my head upon your lap and dream sweetly for a year.
See? Said Lair in a stage whisper. That's how you get women to do things for you. You ought to try it, Jess. Think Hanea will let you rest your weary brow upon her life?